Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source of insight and perspective on global warming news. This show, my name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of July 31st, 2022. Today, we will revisit our ongoing discussion with Steve Sherlock at Franklin Matters. Today, we're going to talk about some new roadmaps recently issued by the state of Massachusetts to guide our climate efforts both towards 2025 and then to 2030. I hope you enjoy. The article says by 2025, the state aims to have 26% of households electrified. It's like one in four homes in the state.
Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, anywhere on the internet, WFPR.FM, and in the local FM Franklin area dial at 102.9. Here today for another Making Sense of Climate session with my guide and climate activist, Ted McIntyre. Happy Tuesday, Ted.
Steve, it's good to be here. I can't believe we're rapidly coming up on Bastille Day. So in the, or maybe I should say the Major League All-Star Game, right? It's like, that's a, like that came way too quick.
But or international transfer from a soccer perspective. I mean, there's a bunch of things that are going on.
That's right. So what do you think of Matt Turner heading off to play in the Premier League? So Matt Turner is the excellent.
Yeah, obviously we'll miss him. Uh-huh. You know, he was great for us. We'll miss him, but we've got some young guys and Petrovic in particular, the young guy they brought in from Serbia, has started off rather well. So, yeah, I don't think we'll miss him overall. They've certainly made some good choices, but it's the nature of the beast. I've been following the Reds since they came here, and we could have lost Twellman had he not had his concussion and career deviated because of that. We certainly lost Dempsey back in the day, and we're going to lose others. That's fine. Right. I mean, that's the nature of the beast, and it's good at least to see with Bruce here that while we lost both Tejan and Turner and Buxa, they replaced them right away. Itself is a feat. Because, you know, it's a credit to the recruiting and the scouting organization that they've got. Because you can't just go, oh, well, you can, but you don't know what you're going to get unless you've really done the research. And so far, you know,
they're doing good.
They're doing okay. Yeah. They had up until the recent game where they lost in New York on what shouldn't be a soccer field in Yankee Stadium. I mean, Yankee Stadium's a baseball field. It shouldn't be played soccer. No, sorry.
Yeah.
People may catch me on that one. Fine. I'll argue that one any day of the week.
It's funny. I
mean, up until that game, they had 10 games unbeaten. It was four wins and six ties or something like that. So, yeah, they've been playing well.
That's good. That's good. I've become more and more of a soccer fan. Dear listeners, if you haven't gone on to soccer, you should go check it out. It's the beautiful game, I think they call it, right?
Yeah, it can be the beautiful game unless it's played on a New York Stadium field. And yeah, there are turf woes with the Revs' place at Gillette, but it's at least sustainable. And actually tying back into the other soccer news in terms of recent news, the World Cup is coming, and into Boston as well. And Gillette will be the home, although it will be called Boston Stadium during the tournament. It won't be called Gillette. But one of the key pieces back to the turf, obviously, when for those who aren't aware, every time FIFA comes, they install temporarily.
FIFA being football.
Federation of International Football or whatever. So it's the International Federation. The governing body of all of soccer that's, you know, legitimately through the leagues. The World Cup is a FIFA tournament. CONCACAF, which is the Canadian, Central America, South America Federation, equivalent to, you know, Europe. They've got a couple of federations as well. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so the turf, they replace the turf because it's a FIFA requirement to play on real grass. So they roll in truckloads of real turf, you know, and it's there for a couple of weeks and then they roll it out. But Bruce was in an interview said, well, one of the benefits coming out of that, we will have a permanent grass field. That will be interesting because as we know in New England, it's not easy to grow grass have it sustainable from a March through October time period, even November when the season's going that long, especially with, as we get into some of the climate things, you know, the droughts and right? Yeah, so stay tuned. There's going to be something happening there.
We need a roadmap to address climate change in soccer. Have to get all that stuff lined up, huh?
Yeah. But more importantly to that point, we're starting here because we're watching the roadmap. And just before the end of June, or just at the end of the June, just before everybody broke for the July break, the state, Baker's administration, updated the major roadmaps. And with new targets, refined targets, and there were some significant omissions, issues, substitutions, whatever within those, huh?
Yes. I mean, so let's talk climate roadmap, right? That's the predicate on which all of our discussions revolve around, right? It's like Massachusetts is has a roadmap. It's on a path. It's following that roadmap literally and figuratively to figure out what, you know, how we're going to achieve the goals of being, you know, good climate citizens and sustainable. I can't say that I have all of the, I can't say definitely, but my belief is that the roadmap bill that was passed in 2021, right, calls for the executive branch, which in this case would be the Baker administration, to put out intermediate updates to what the roadmap is, right? Mm-hmm. And that is I think it's on like a 5-year timeline. They have to have targets to achieve goals that are intermediate. And that is designed to prevent the idea that we're going to wait until 2049 and then decide we're going to achieve the roadmap in 2050, right?
Right.
We have to be making steady progress.
Okay, we know government works slowly. So legislation just can't pass and then sit back and say, oh, we'll wait till 2030 and figure out where we are. No, they can't.
I mean, all this stuff takes years to, what did Obama say about changing the direction of the federal government? It's like changing the direction of an aircraft carrier, right? Mm. You do it a little bit at a time and you gotta watch it go. So anyway, so just at the end of June, and of course the dark side of me says they did it, they tried to bury it just before the July 4th holiday so they wouldn't encounter too much news static, but they did put out an updated roadmap for the years 2025 and 2030. Okay, I think the best summary that I've been able to capture is from Earthwhile and Miriam Wasser at WBUR. She usually writes, if you don't follow, check that out. I mean, she writes very clearly and explains things in a way that everyone can get to. And so she ticked off a bunch of things that are in this new roadmap in a repertorial way, right? Without passing judgment. I mean, I would just tell you, spoiler alert, I mean, the Baker administration, I do not believe has not yet appointed Environmental Justice Council that is supposed to be doing.
That's right? One of their delinquent actions.
But anyway, so the roadmap covers a bunch of stuff. One of the things it talks about is that, one of the top level goals is to reduce overall carbon dioxide greenhouse gas emissions by 50%. And of course, once you start talking 50%, you have to say, well, what's my baseline, right? Mm-hmm. Where did I start out?
Right.
And that is in itself a big question, right? Mm-hmm. Because the farther you go back in time, the bigger the reductions you have to make.
Sure. Right?
Anyway, the state has decided it's going to use the 1990 emission level as the one that they want to reduce. They want to use that as the baseline and reduce carbon emissions by, and what it's saying is 33% emissions reductions by 2025.
Which is only a couple of years away.
And of course, 50%, the bill and the target calls that 50% greenhouse gas emissions net total ultimate everything from the state is going to be 50% reduced by 2030 compared to what levels there were in 1990.
It's only 7 years away, or 8, depending upon how you're counting.
right, exactly. And so what it does is, what's new here is that the state has said, we will reduce emissions by 33% in the year 2025, right? And as you say, quite rightly, according to my calendar, it's 2022. So how are you going to, please tell me more, right? Don't stop, right? Don't stop there. Please tell me more.
And I think in terms of perspective, two things. One, quickly for the listeners, you don't have to take notes while we're doing this. There's a link in the show notes that'll have all the links that we reference. So you'll be able to do that. But two, I think referring back to one of our earlier sessions, and we can include that link specifically, we had talked about, I think it was the 1990 piece, and how during COVID, specifically during the pandemic and the shutdown, we were able to achieve almost, I think it was 23% at that time, primarily because things were shut down, and transportation in particular, which has come up as well in a number of fronts as being a key contributor. While we're shut down, nobody's transporting. Cars on the road, buses aren't on the roads, traffic is less, never mind the supply issues, et cetera. So how close were we, and how much do we really have to get to? That's part of this story.
Yeah, and there was I think Wasserman had a reference that something like we were down by something like 31% over 2019 into 2020. Mm-hmm. But that was because of COVID. But to your point, I think that you say things like you're going to have this big emissions reduction by 2025. You look at what happened in COVID and you say, oh, yeah, it is possible. It's pretty clear that if we change behavior, we can change the emissions output. Now, shutting down COVID so nobody commuted had significant impacts across the world. But I mean, I still maintain, if you mandated a 4-day work week, right, people only went into the office 4 instead of 5 days, that's a 20%. That's a start, right? And it's all right. Behavioral. It's not sure. Like we need electric vehicles, right? It's just like, don't drive so much. Right. And the society responded in terms of COVID. And so if we recognize the emergency is the same scale, you could do similar things that maybe would be less impactful economy-wise. Right? Mm-hmm. You can sort of cherry pick what you do. Anyway, so the bill, so it's 33% overall target, but then that breaks out into transportation, electricity generation, and buildings. Okay, mm-hmm. So there are three big chunks there that you start thinking about greenhouse gas emissions. So they are talking about reducing transportation-related greenhouse gas emissions, right? And there they've talked about plan is to go, according to the article I saw, is that going to reduce transportation-related emissions by 18% compared to 1990 by the year 2025. Mm-hmm. So that's a near-term thing, 18%. And then 34% reduction in emissions by 2030, again, based on compared to. I don't know how that 34% of the emissions reductions is going to be for transportation is going to have to be made up somewhere else, right? Some other sector is going to have to be more than 50% in order to accommodate blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, because a couple of pieces, just minor points. And obviously, as we started talking this, and we could spend hours going into the details, going to try and cover, kind of skim across the surface. But to your point, in terms of how are we going to do that, given the timeline and its aggressive approach, we know MBTA, for example, it does not have a plan to transport or change its buses, change its commuter rail within those timelines. So where else is that going to come? Okay, granted, the Senate is doing something around cars and electric vehicle enforcements and stuff, but there's the related piece of just the car rubber on the road that generates its own pollution and greenhouse gases as well. So it's a mixed bag, and it really begs the question, just overall, how are we going to get there?
Exactly. And Wasserman says quarters, reversing the trend of overall, we have to reduce overall miles driven, reduce vehicle miles traveled, which is an acronym, VMT, mm-hmm. vehicle miles traveled. You'll see it as you go into this. You have to, people have to commute less. And how mm-hmm. do you do that? Well, you have jobs closer to where people live. You have electric bicycles. You have better mass transit. And to your point, the MBTA is way behind the curve in terms of electrifying, or even it would appear getting people to ride the MBTA. Right? Yeah. So there's all kinds of questions there.
22 there.
Yeah, and these are all tied up in the roadmap. Right. The other thing that is important for achieving the goals is, in addition to transportation, there's greenhouse gas emissions from buildings. Yes. Right. So here they've sent a target that they're going to reduce by 30% from buildings by the year 2025. Mm-hmm. Okay. And 47% by 2030. So there's pretty clear target. I mean, reducing emissions from buildings by 30% by 2025 is itself incredibly aggressive. We keep coming back to the idea that all, when we talk about buildings, where, you know, there's public schools, there's all the buildings in downtown Boston, but then there's the house you live in, you mm-hmm. personally live in, right?
Residents, and somehow right.
residences across the state, of course, which span a huge range, right? From people that have already converted to people that can't afford to convert. How are you going to do that? So there's a bunch of mechanisms in the roadmap allegedly to try and reduce that. And the way the state is thinking about it is twofold. One is a retrofit of homes to be more energy efficient, right? And this is, I think, the Baker administration. They prefer to make everything, make homes more energy efficient by insulating them, but you keep burning natural gas in the basement, right? But you burn a little bit less natural gas. Mm. So there's one side is let's use the Mass Save program, which we've talked about in the past, to help people do better insulation, improve that program. And then the flip side is to aggressively try and get people to use heat pumps, right? Which we talked about. I mean, again, dear listener, if you haven't heard heat pump before, you've heard it here first. You heard it here first, but it won't be the last time you hear it about it. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. That's an ongoing. So the article says by 2025, the state aims to have 26% of households electrified. It's like one in four homes in the state having heat pumps and being electrified. That is pretty remarkable. And to say you're going to do that between July of 2022 and, let's be kind, to say December of 2025, right?
Right.
You know, so what they want is widespread, in quotation mark, deployment of these heat pumps, which are, again, if you don't know what a heat pump is, it's basically a refrigerator that can run both ways. It can heat up what's inside the refrigerator, or it can cool mm-hmm. off what's inside the refrigerator, right?
Right.
And there you go. So there's all kinds of stuff around that. And then the third big chunk of this 2025-2030 roadmap is to talk about the generation of electricity in and of itself.
Right.
So
how do we generate, or what is the source?
Right. And of course, there's these funny interactions that as you have more heat pumps, you need more electricity,
right?
And that has to be generated in a clean way. And so the new plan says we're going to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from electricity by 53% by the year 2025, right? Which is good. I mean, that's a little bit ahead of the curve. 70% by the year 2030. So I guess that's where the extra reductions are made over the 50% target, compared, whereas you say, well, the transportation isn't going to quite make 50%, but we're going to do it up. We're going to make it up over mm-hmm. here and the electricity generation. That's where much of the bill that's in front of the state and the Massachusetts legislature is focused on, hoping to get wind turbines installed off Massachusetts shore, mm-hmm. calling for the utilities, mandating the utilities to build wind turbines. We have the example of Vineyard Wind, which is sort of the leading example in the state.
Right.
But it's interesting that this current roadmap starts to make more of an explicit point about how it's not enough just to have wind turbines spinning off Martha's Vineyard. You have to bring that power onshore and route it to the place where you're going to use it.
Via the grid.
Is right. That can turn into a bloodbath, right? Yeah. Because nobody wants the power line in their backyard. Not in my backyard is a classic thing. And so the state needs to begin to think about how it's going to get all this electricity from offshore wind onto the grid. Mm-hmm.
That's where one of the other themes we've had, and I think these last two points kind of touch on and then open us into the disconnects even within the administration. So on the housing side, there's also a net zero stretch code, which the stretch code was being revised based upon input and stuff, so that instead of authorizing or requiring all new buildings to be electrically based, it also, and retrofits, it also threw that or in there that allows fossil fuels to be continued. So wait a sec. And then we've talked and spent some time about the ISO New England and the decision for themselves to postpone introducing wind power because it's too cheap and it doesn't fit with their calculation, so that they can continue to use the fossil fuels, which is what they're based on. So
yeah,
the goals are nice. They sound achievable. And to your point, to our conversation, if we can shut down during the pandemic, granted, that's just an example. We've got other things we need to do with that as well. It is possible, but these other actions need to be taken in conjunction in order for us to go forward and make some change.
You're right. I mean, that's sort of what makes it interesting is this like turbulent, all kinds of things going on that interact. And you need to kind of be aware of them all. And you're right. It's like I want to talk about the DOER net zero stretch code, because that's a particularly galling little thing. But the last thing in the roadmap, a couple other issues in the, so this roadmap document, we'll put a link in, right? Yeah. This is the Massachusetts Department of Energy and Environmental Affairs that has this roadmap, top level roadmap. Where's the state going? The other thing that they're going to do is tighten up some of the regulations around what are called super greenhouse gases. Right? I don't know how much we've talked about this, but just to remind people, in your current refrigerator, there are gases. In the refrigerant gas that's being used in your refrigerator, we don't have to go into the chemistry of it,
right,
is an incredibly powerful.
I know there was a change or something.
Yeah. HFCs, hydrofluorocarbons or something, right? Yeah. But the thing about those, they're tiny amounts compared to carbon dioxide, but they have huge impact, right? They're much more of a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide is. What's sort of protecting us is that there's so little of it that gets leaked, but we still need to worry about that. They also talk about, so this is another pet peeve. When we talk about these super greenhouse gases, the other super greenhouse gas is methane, right? Which is much more potent than carbon dioxide. You and I, Steve, at least we have gone on endlessly nattering on about methane leaks and what these guys are trying to do to us. The roadmap says we're going to explore additional ways to reduce methane leaks, right? When at the same time, the DPU is trying to push methane and hydrogen into the future, and there's the leaks and the gas pipes, all this stuff. So to your point, the roadmap is this nice aspirational thing and all nice words, but say, okay, show me the money. Right? As Jerry Maguire said, show me what, do it. Don't just talk nice about it. Right. But there is a roadmap. It's out there. If you get a chance to read it, put the links up. Certainly you can read the WBUR article that it's kind of is an explainer that gets you going in the right direction.
And it'll be a bunch of other links in there. There's at least a couple of Boston Globe articles referencing this. The Commonwealth Magazine had some essays and articles on it as well. So yeah, there's a host of links in there. And I think the key piece overall is while we may bemoan the legislation and legislature on the one hand, they are at least taking some action. We've talked earlier that the Senate had taken action to do their, what was it, drive forward bill. The House had a separate bill fostering the wind. It's now in conference committee. Whether that conference committee actually comes out with something before the end of the session, July 31st, remains to be seen, or whether that kind of kicks down the road like everything else seems to have been until the session resumes in the fall. Obviously, these are impacts that we're going to pay for at some point in time. And it's kind of like pay me now, pay me later. It's where is it?
So let's go there for a minute, right? There is, as you said, there are bills floating around the Massachusetts legislature, right? We're now deep into the summer. It's my belief, Steve, correct me if I'm wrong, is that the legislative session ends at the end of July.
Correct.
So if these guys don't pass these bills, which would be horrific, then it's a dead letter. You start all over again in January of 2023, and now you have another 2-year cycle where these guys are playing in like 2023 into 2024. That's essentially 2025.
Right.
So it would be mind-numbingly frustrating if the legislature fails to pass these bills in the next 2 weeks, which is why there have been increasingly urgent calls that something has to, that these bills have to be brought out. Mm-hmm. And we don't have time to go through all the stuff, but our list of shows talks about, you know, the Section 65, which would allow building codes for test towns that want to not use natural gas, right? There's efforts to rein in the DPU in this, the possible use of hydrogen. There's the whole question of how many electric vehicles we're going to have, and is that fair to the people who can't afford an electric vehicle? Right?
Yeah.
To just walk away from that, it would not be a good thing. And that's why there are calls to demand that the legislature produce something over the next 10 days. So if you're looking for a climate action, dear listener, call up your favorite state legislator and say, please make sure that a good bill is produced. Mm-hmm. Is that fair, Steve?
I think that's fair. Absolutely. Because clearly from this, I mean, I'm doing this personally because I needed to make sense of what's going on. And it's frustrating as heck because it is, to our conversation, is just reinforcing. This sounds good, but then this is over here. It's like left hand, right hand are not talking to each other. We're at different ends and we need to get together to do so. And there are some people that are trying to do so. And it is admittedly a tough decision. There are so many stakeholders in there. The power clearly in many cases is on the fossil fuel side. They've got the money to throw at the legislatures more so than you and I individually could to have some influence, and yet our voices need to be heard. And there's why the action and the calling and the writing and the standouts, that's what we need to do to at least have the conversation, get some action sooner than later.
Bill McKibben, if you don't know who he is like a prophet of the climate movement, right? He's been around since night very, but I mean, he says
ambassador, that evangelist, whatever, he fits into that category for sure.
That your body is the currency that you have, right? The powers that be, the fossil fuel industry has dollars, you have your body, right? And so standing on a street corner or doing things like that is what you can do, is, and that is pretty powerful because you're a voter. But can I, since you're in a frustrated mode, maybe we'll find out to be happy. Let me talk a little bit about the net zero stretch code and the Department of Environmental Energy Resources. So we've talked about this. Again, this part of this is the continuing return to the topics that we make incremental progress on.
Right.
But earlier in the spring, just to quickly rewind, the 2021 Climate Roadmap Bill, right? That was passed a year ago this time. No, more than that. But the bill said that the DOER, the Division of Energy Resources, Department of Energy Resources, would promulgate a building code, right, that is net zero in quotation marks, and that the DOER would define net zero as a building code. So just again, now we've said a whole bunch of words that don't make sense, but mm-hmm. you're talking about a building code, which is how you make new buildings, which then feeds back into this whole question of how are we going to reduce carbon global greenhouse gas emissions from the building sector. As your DOER got the responsibility to build, to make a building code. The standard definition of net zero, which has been bandied about by think tanks and all the people mm-hmm. working on it, basically call for net zero buildings to have no natural gas infrastructure, no gas heater in the basement, no gas stove, no gas hot water heater. That's what net zero means, right? And that was, and so that was the expectation, that there would be a building code that allowed a community, if it wanted to, if the community chose to adopt a building code that said there will be no more gas used in new buildings. Fine, fine. DOER takes it, and then the machinations begin underneath the surface, right? The forces that you and I can't see mm-hmm. come into play. And what finally, last spring, DOER comes out with what they call the straw man building code, right? Again, right. This is
the draft.
They put this thing up for discussion. But what they did was they took a definition of net zero that is different from what the community had discussed as being net zero. And in particular, I'll read you the quote. So this is a quote from the report from the department, from the DOER, right? It says, therefore, the specialized code, right, this is the thing we're talking about. The specialized code adopts a definition of net zero buildings as follows. So a net zero building is a building which is consistent with the achievement of the Massachusetts 2050 net zero emissions, right? Consistent with
the everything goal. Else that's in the roadmap.
Right. But that doesn't mean you can't have gas. It's just consistent. And the way they square that circle is by saying consistent with the achievement of the 2050 net zero emissions through a combination of highly efficient design, that is to say, lots of insulation, highly efficient design, together with being an all electric or zero energy building, fine, fine, or, so there's all these conditionals, or where fossil fuels are utilized, a building that is fully pre-wired for future electrification, which is like this get out of jail card, right? They say, okay, you can do whatever the heck you want as long as you're like mm-hmm. ready in 2045 to take all that good, cool, green electricity off the grid. And yeah, no.
So you can put an oil burner and or a gas heater in as long as you've pre-wired it to go electric and or heat pump and or geothermal and or something else. As long as you do that, then you're okay. Which, yeah. you know, gets back to our, oh, wait a sec.
I mean, it's all predicated on the idea that to be net zero means the entire Massachusetts grid will be net zero, providing green electricity. And then whatever you do in your house, right, you can, which, so what that allows is for essentially a continuation of installing new gas heaters in homes, which then have mm-hmm. a 20-year lifetime, right, which are going to be around, or a 30-year lifetime, which are going to be there in 2052. It's mm-hmm. going to cost money to take it out. I mean, it just, from a climate perspective, it just doesn't make any sense. But from the short term, you know, I need to, from the short term perspective of the fossil fuel industry, they don't care about 2050. They care about the next quarterly profit report, and that's all. And they're willing to sacrifice the 2050.
Oh, but they want to give us green natural gas adding hydrogen to it as well. We're not going to go there.
That deal is, that's a whole other thing which the legislature needs to deal with. But anyway, I'm just saying the following thing, that this specialized code has been released by the DOER, and the DOER is now accepting public comments, okay, on the code. And so you can tell the DOER that you don't like this. Mm-hmm. We went through this exercise last spring, and they...
For the draft. And they've made some revisions to it, but still not to the point where we need to.
Exactly. But there are additional opportunities So it turns out that there are two things going to happen. The DOER itself will have hearings to accept input. And it's actually remarkably easy. What they did last time in the spring was you joined a Zoom call.
Right.
And you would have 3 minutes to speak. If you didn't mm-hmm. want to write a letter, you could speak for 3 minutes, right? And then you'd made your testimony. And so sure. there were three opportunities to do that. But get these times, July 22nd from 9:30 in the morning to 11:30 at the Division of Fisheries and Wildlife in Westboro, right? So you can either, it'll be a Zoom thing, but you can go visit. There's one on July 22nd. There's one on August 2nd in Quincy. And then there's an online one on August 8th. So if you're interested and you want to like take some satisfaction in speaking your mind, those are three opportunities for the DOER. At the same time, the Massachusetts Climate Action Network will help you figure out what to say. All right, so the MCAN, Massachusetts Climate Action Network, is the organization I'm involved with. We will be having webinars on July 20th, July 25th, and on August 8th to help you figure out how to write a letter, right? So that you can either testify or write a letter. You know, many people are, they shouldn't be, but are intimidated by, you know, speaking on Zoom. But I mean, you can write a letter. MCAN will figure out how to do that, where to send it, what the best talking points are, so you understand better. So I highly urge people to sign up for those webinars to learn more about this DOER issue and to try to push back on what seems like a wrong-headed policy. I mean, what can I say? I'll say that as kindly as I can. It's wrong-headed.
Left-handed, right-handed, taking two steps backwards and one step forward. I mean, it's not getting us to the aggressive report targets that have been out there, at least in our mind. And if somebody wants to tell us how we can do that in that way, we're open to that. We'll listen. Yeah. But at this point, we don't see that coming together. It just doesn't add up for us. So, yeah. Then to your point, using Bill McKibben's piece, we can use our body, our time, our effort, whether verbally or textually, to submit and say, hey, you know, let's get ideally, you know, 3,000, half the voters to say, this is no good. Then they may, in fact, do something, as opposed to if there's only 200, oh, it's the usual suspects that kind of just shuff us off.
Yes. And I would just say that is one last thought, that people should not view writing a letter to the DOER as a chore or a thing that makes you unhappy. It is incredibly satisfying if you believe that something should happen to make that statement, right? And you feel better. So it is a way, it's like a good thing to do. It'll mm-hmm. make you a happier person, right? And on top of that, you've done a good thing for the world, so.
Right, well, and take that approach. And in my way, that's one of the things why I like to talk, you like to talk, we're talking together, trying to make sense of climate. So this is one step, and then hopefully people will listen and then share the links and join and take action, continue the conversation, and ultimately we'll get there. Hopefully sooner than later, because as we've also been seeing in the headlines, it's not great out there.
No. I mean, the topic's so broad and so interesting, but the whole question of rivers, you know, fires out in California, like the Yosemite is burning and going to burn mm-hmm. down the Maricopa Sequoia Grove.
Right.
Oh my God. So there's all
Texas
bad stuff.
Texas has a problem with the excess heat and their grid may fail. Yeah. We've got Lake Mead drying up. So there's a water supply for a good portion of the nation. Yeah. The Po River in Italy. So yeah, around the world, they're all having problems. So even the Po River in Italy is also drying up because the snow in the Alps has not been appearing and it's not flowed down through. So it's that entire ecosystem. It's challenging. It really is challenging.
So I think that the hopeful, good, positive thing is that even in the face of the sort of tumult that we see, right? Mm-hmm. On climate, I mean, so much else, but on climate, right? Taking action grounds you and gives you a feeling of of participation, and that you're not entirely a spectator, that you have agency in this big thing, and maybe a small bit of agency, but you have agency. So exercise it and you'll feel better.
Right, right. And even one small step, right, makes a difference. So, yeah. I think that's probably a good place to close, because I know there's some of the other topics we have that even get more dire than what we've already discussed. Oh, yeah. So let's close on a happy part and say, yes, you can take action. You can do it, and then feel good about having taken action. And then, oh, by the way, tell somebody so that they can take action. And now you've got twice the action, twice the satisfaction, and then let that multiply. It also brings back, what was it? Arlo Guthrie, which generally kind of a Thanksgiving song, you know. But when he walked into, and this obviously is aging us to a certain extent, so yes, I understand. There was a draft at some point in time back in the Vietnam days, and if you walked into the draft dodger and said something, then it just started a movement. This today should be the movement. Do something for climate. Take action. And for the listeners, as usual, we do this because Franklin matters.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.
So there you have it. Roadmaps and stuff. We'll talk to you again soon. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
Very cool.